Much, Brian, and if you set your clock by the business news, don't worry, everything is all right. It's only 11 minutes past seven, and Caroline Murphy is here with it, says in the papers.
McCabe to help Garda unit with probe. That's the headline in the Irish Examiner this morning, as both it and the Irish Times lead with more on the plans to investigate the sergeant's allegations into abuse of the penalty points system. The Examiner story says that during yesterday's two-hour meeting between Sergeant McCabe, Assistant Commissioner John Toomey and members of the Professional Standards Unit, he was asked to make himself available for a week so that the unit could draw on his knowledge. The Times says the move is for at least a week, and also that the arrangement where a whistleblower is effectively being seconded to the unit charged with upholding professional standards is unprecedented in the Garda. Unprecedented or not, it's welcome, according to the Examiner. The headline over an analysis piece by Michael Clifford advises, use the force within. Employing Sergeant McCabe's talents for the betterment of the Gardaí, he says, would show that a genuine effort is being made to change the culture within the force. What, meanwhile, of the effort being made within government to devise a budget strategy on income tax? It makes the lead in the Irish Independent today. Revealed, cut to top rate of tax on table in budget is the headline. In the story, Fiona Sheehan says a cut to the higher rate is firmly on the budget table as a way to provide relief to middle-income workers, provided the benefit can be clawed back from higher earners. The average family, he continues, is only expected to benefit to the tune of €300 a year, and he says the relief will be targeted to give the greatest benefit to those on middle incomes. The more a worker earns, the less their tax cut will be worth. The cuts in health spending over the past year, meanwhile, get front page space on the Examiner. Government cooked the books on health budget, says Fianna Fáil, is the headline. The story is about Micheál Martin's accusation yesterday at the start of his party's think-in. We're told he claimed that there's evidence officials consciously misled the public and the Dáil over what cutbacks were realistic as part of what he termed a fraudulent financial plan. He's quoted directly. The whole government is responsible, we're told, he said, and Brendan Howlin is right in the middle of it, throwing figures at health that had no relation to reality. What of the reality which lies beyond the vote in Scotland, meanwhile? The Independent finds front page space for news of a last minute London rally where celebrity campaigners urged voters to stay part of the UK. Geldof flies Union flag as he tells Scotland to vote no, is the headline there. While back in the Times, there's front page space on the possible new reality for some fee-paying schools. Seven schools may abandon private status, says the headline over a piece which says discussions between that many establishments and the Department of Education are ongoing, amid renewed claims that the government's drive for greater equity in secondary education is ending up costing the state more money. But finally this morning, to something which might cost money, but which also gives great pleasure. Pages 1 and 3 of the Irish Daily Mail mark and celebrate 25 years of Fair City. No one thought it would last, we're told, but it's still going strong. 500,000 viewers tune in 4 times a week. And for them, the very first episode will be on RTE Player tonight, we're told, along with a special online behind-the-scenes show.
Thank you very much, Caroline. 14 minutes past seven.
Time now, though, for the business news and Brian Finn.
The OECD has set out the first phase of its plan to overhaul the global corporate tax regime later today. The organisation has been working for a number of months at the behest of the G20 group of nations on changes to controversial regimes that allow multinationals to avoid large tax bills. It's expected some elements of the Irish regime will come into their sights, including the double Irish, which allows big firms to avoid large tax bills by switching taxes on their operations here, usually to offshore tax havens. The government officially supports moves to remove tax loopholes, but the question is whether they'll take preemptive steps in October's budget to recast the corporate tax regime or wait for the conclusion of the OECD process. Staying with the OECD, yesterday it downgraded its outlook for global growth owing to geopolitical tensions and also the uncertainty around the referendum on Scottish independence. It's revised downwards the outlook for all large economies this year except India. It expects growth of 2.1% in the US, 0.9% for Japan, but just 0.8% in the Eurozone. That in the aftermath of dire economic indicators and the decision by the ECB to cut rates to near zero. It marks sizable downgrade from its May economic outlook for the Eurozone when it forecasts growth of 1.2% for this year. Ireland saw its ranking rise to the top of the list in Europe in the latest HSBC Trade Confidence Index. 7 out of every 10 respondents expect trade volumes to increase over the next 6 months. Strong economic growth in the US and the UK were the key drivers for the outlook here, with the chemicals and pharma sectors leading the way. The agribusiness sector is expected to grow by 40% over the next 15 years. Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba has raised the share price range ahead of its initial public offering next Friday, from $60 to $66 previously to a range of $66 to $68 a share. The company is in the midst of its Asia roadshow ahead of what could be the biggest IPO in history. If priced at the top of the range, the company could raise just under $22 billion. Finally, currencies, and the euro buys $1.29.4 and 79.8 pence sterling, Cathal.
Welcome back. You're listening to Morning Ireland at very nearly 16 minutes past seven. Now, we heard on yesterday's programme that the Garda whistleblower Sergeant Maurice McCabe wanted a move away from his current post. John Devitt of Transparency International, which has been advising Sergeant McCabe, told us that he was finding things difficult at present. Now, since then, we know that Sergeant McCabe has had a meeting with the Professional Standards of Unit of the Gardaí to investigate allegations against abuses of the penalty points system. And we're joined now by our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds. Just tell us about that meeting and what has happened since then in terms of what the sergeant's role is going to be, at least for the near future.
Well, this meeting went on for about 2 hours. Sergeant Maurice McCabe met the Assistant Commissioner in Charge of Traffic, John Toomey, and members of the Forces Professional Standards Unit. They're the Gardaí who will be carrying out this investigation or the audit into Sergeant McCabe's claims. The meeting was originally scheduled for Garda headquarters, but was moved because of the media interest and the cameras and the reporters outside. Sergeant Maurice McCabe was invited as a result of that meeting too, and has agreed to help in this audit, this internal inquiry. And he'll be able to take the investigators through his allegations in detail. He'll be able to show them on the system and otherwhere where he believes there are suspicious cancellations, how they were done, and what the outcome of his investigations are, and perhaps identify other suspicious cancellations. My understanding is that he hasn't been formally seconded as such, that he is still based in Mullingar, but for the time being, he will be working closely and directly with the inquiry team on this matter for at least a week and possibly longer, depending on what comes out of it. I mean, it certainly represents a departure for both the Garda authorities and Sergeant McCabe. And the situation now is that the Garda authorities and the Garda whistleblower are working together on this matter.
Yeah, and it's the ultimate test of everybody's good faith. In other words, this should work. If it doesn't work, it'll be very serious.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the allegations that Sergeant McCabe has provided to the Gardaí, and that obviously the Minister and the Commissioner are concerned about them, but they are taking the line, both of them taking the line, saying, look, let's just wait and see, let's investigate these, and let's see where these investigations take us. What he has provided to the investigation team, and in fact is now working on himself, are examples of where penalty points have been cancelled, where he says they should not have been cancelled. And they were cancelled using reasons which are normally legitimate, but in some of the cases that he has highlighted, he suspects they are not legitimate. For example, some of the reasons that have been provided for cancellations are driving emergency vehicles, unable to find postal addresses, that sort of thing. Now, the investigation must now look not only at the samples of suspicious cancellations that Sergeant Maurice McCabe has provided the investigation team with, but also other cancellations of penalty points where these excuses have been used, and these have to be checked. So therefore, at this stage, the audit team do not have a figure for the number of suspicious cancellations. They have to check the samples, and they have to check the other cancellations that have used these similar excuses that are now the focus of this investigation. What's perhaps most surprising and potentially damaging is the allegation that it has been claimed that penalty points have been cancelled after the new controls were introduced on June the 16th. And if that turns out to be the case, and if some of these penalty points shouldn't have been cancelled, then the Gardaí have a real problem. However, senior Gardaí I spoke to yesterday and last night are quietly confident in the integrity of the new system, considering the fact that so few people have the authority to cancel penalty points. They were saying that it might be possible that during the transition period, points cancelled, for example, in May or June, before before June the 16th, when the new controls began, could perhaps have registered on the system after that date. But that is just a guess at the moment. Everybody will really have to wait for the audit to establish the facts. But certainly there would be some shock if penalty points were cancelled after the June date, the June 16th date, that should not have been cancelled.
All right. So Sergeant McCabe clearly has a new role, at least for a week and maybe longer. Are you clear, Paul, as to when we'll know the outcome of all this?
No, we haven't been given a timeline. In fact, the Commissioner said the timeline in relation to the cancellation of the penalty points was quite significant, and they haven't put a figure on the number of cancellations that they have to look at that will have to be examined. So we just have to let the audit do its work and see what the outcome is. I mean, Noreen Sullivan has moved immediately on this. She informed the Minister. The Minister sent documentation to GSOC that has been incorporated into the already existing GSOC inquiry, and that's continuing. However, the internal investigation is underway now, and Maurice McCabe is on board. So she and everybody else is waiting for the outcome, but both she and the Minister have promised that the findings of the internal audit will be published. It shouldn't take too long, specifically in relation to the time period after June the 16th, when the new system was set up. It shouldn't take too long to audit those cancellations, because we're only talking about a 3-month time frame there. So it shouldn't, we should find out pretty quickly. And also, the Assistant Commissioner, the Interim Commissioner herself said yesterday that really, since June the 16th, only 3 people have the authority to cancel penalty points, and it won't take too long before for them to cooperate with the inquiry as well.
Paul Reynolds, thank you very much. You won.
Fianna Fáil's 20 TDs and 14 senators are waking up here at the Abbey Hotel in Roscommon for the second day of their pre-parliamentary think-in. We'll be hearing from some of them later and talking to party leader Micheál Martin, who yesterday accused the government of living a lie and cooking the books on their health policy and spending, saying they have knowingly put patients at risk. Fine Gael TD Gerry Buttermer is chairperson of the Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children. He's in our Cork studio. Good morning, Gerry Buttermer.
Good morning, Gavin.
Your government's big plans for health are on hold or delayed. Plans to scrap hundreds of thousands of medical cards are gone. And already this year, there's half a billion euro hole in the health budget. What part of Micheál Martin's analysis is wrong?
Well, first of all, Micheál Martin promised an end to the punch and judy politics, but what we've seen from him is trying to scare people. Secondly, his party in 3.5 years have not published a health plan. We've seen no health policy from Fianna Fáil. Thirdly, under Micheál Martin and under Fianna Fáil, we saw 3 things in health. First of all, we saw budget overruns for 14 of the 17 years. Secondly, we saw Micheál Martin's Minister for Health presiding over a health supplementary to the tune of 200 plus million. And thirdly, in regard to health overspend, Micheál Martin and his government farmed out health policy to the Progressive Democrats and refused to take the Department of Health. And
yes, his analysis of your government's health position, in what part is he wrong?
He's wrong in many issues. First of all, we have a government health policy which is based upon a very simple and very clear core objective that we will have a health system delivering to people on their medical need, not on the basis of what's in their pocket, having a single universal health system. And I would challenge Fianna Fáil to come clean to the Irish people this morning and to say, are they in favour of this type of a policy, or do they want a continuation of the status quo? Thirdly, in regard to the government health policy, as articulated by the previous minister and now by the new minister, we're seeing the GP under sixes being talked with the IMO. We've seen the minister talking about stabilisation of the cost of the health insurance. We're looking at reducing the cost of medicines and work continuing regarding Healthy Ireland, Children's Hospital,
The two major planks of your government's health policy: free GP care for all by 2016, universal health insurance in the second term of government. The Health Minister has already conceded that that's not going to happen in time or at all. I mean, there's nothing wrong with admitting that you've got it wrong, but hasn't Micheál Martin a point when he says that your health policy is in tatters?
No. First of all, regarding the free GP care and sixes, there's consultation and talks taking place with the RMO, and the minister is correct in saying that we shouldn't put a timeline regarding this, because there is no sense in putting a timeline when if you miss the timeline, people will be critical. And then regarding universal health insurance, the minister has talked about pausing the unfurling of UHI, and we've always said as a government it would take two terms. And if you look at what the building blocks have been put in place regarding the achievement of universal health insurance through the special delivery unit, through the creation of the hospital groups, the clinical directorates, the reform of the HSC by appointing HSC directorates, and reform of the VHI, all steady, sensible building blocks leading towards UHI, as we said, by 2019.
Which has been delayed.
I think it is important.
Already, for example, for this year, not only has the HSE overspent, but in order to meet its own targets, at least 700 staff a month will need to go between now and the end of the year. Is that going to happen?
Well, that's the worst case scenario presented this morning in the Irish Times, I believe. But what we must put in context here is under this government, we have seen reform of the health system. We have seen a reduction in waiting times. We've seen outpatient appointments being streamlined for once. We've seen the creation of a single monitor to watch, trolley watch, taking the INMO figures.
Which has increased again.
No, the waiting times have been reduced under the government. So under this government, our movement is towards single-tier health system. That's the policy, that is the objective, as being articulated by the Minister for Health and by the government. That is still government policy. What we have seen is the building blocks towards UHI being put in place. If it takes a bit longer to get there, isn't it better to get it right and not have the mistakes made in the past, which we saw under the Fianna Fáil PDE governments, where we saw an exponential increase, quadrupling of health spending, with more people being put into place, yet the health system was a disaster.
Gerry Buttermer, Fine Gael TD and Chairperson of the Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children. Thank you for speaking to us this morning.
Gavin.
There'll be more on this with the Fianna Fáil leader, Micheál Martin, later in the programme. It's 26 minutes past seven.
By next week, Morning Ireland will be leading the way for RTE as we join the early arrivals at the National Ploughing Championships in Stradbally. Before the crowds head for County Leash, Cian McCormack has been looking at issues which affect farmers and rural Ireland. Today he reports on how the dairy industry looks poised to bring some fairly serious changes to Irish agriculture.
Beef farmers protested in Ballinasloe in County Galway tonight over prices they're getting from factories and supermarkets. Farmers say they plan to step up the protest.
It's been a mixed year for farming.
On last night in Navan, a very, very irate meeting.
The beef sector is under pressure.
There was skin and hair flying, quite frankly, in relation to what is a worsening situation for beef farmers. At the moment,
tillage yields are above average in most areas. And with milk quotas being abolished next year, the dairy sector is fast becoming the fair-haired boy of Irish agriculture. Professor Alan Rennick of UCD's School of Agriculture and Food.
Well, I think we can see a major change, but I think we're going to see a growth in the industry that has been, in a sense, held back by these quotas. Dairy is the most profitable, probably the most profitable enterprise in a main enterprise in Irish farming. And so that's why there's a lot of interest in the chance of expanding.
The mid-year outlook by Teagasc says good milk prices, reduced costs and favourable weather conditions are likely to lead to increased profitability this year.
But still, we're not talking about huge levels of incomes. Perhaps we're saying actually dairy is the one enterprise where a farmer can make a fair return. People have been building up to this for quite a while. We've known for a long time that it's coming. People have been increasing the replacement number of heifers in their herd, looking forward to producing more in the future. But still, there will be some that now, with it going, will be thinking particularly about changing from perhaps beef production, which is having a lot of problems at the moment, into dairy production. So there is also perhaps new entrants coming in, as well as the expansion of existing producers. I think there will be some examples of that. I mean, I think beef producers on better land, recognising the difficulties in the industry, will see an opportunity. But we have to recognise that it's going to take a lot of investment, and that these producers, in a sense, are taking on more risk than those that are simply expanding existing herds. And then, of course, there will be beef producers in more marginal areas where perhaps dairy isn't the option. So we're not going to see, I think, a wholesale change from beef to dairy in Ireland.
David Kerr, who farms outside Portlaoise, doesn't anticipate a big switch from beef to dairy, but he can see a change in the way things are done.
The younger guys who have left college in recent years and have a reasonable block of land will look at this milk quota abolition as an opportunity, and they'll realise it's worth going for. I think the older guys are not going to change into dairying, and that's that's pretty reasonable to expect, I think.
Kerr, who's also an Uffield scholar specialising in the dairy industry, has built up his own herd from 40 to 137 over the past 8 years.
When the milk quotas were introduced 30 years ago, New Zealand had the same output as Ireland in terms of kilos of milk. Now they're producing four times as much. Their dairy production is somewhere near 25% of GDP. Maybe we don't want to have so much of our national product come out of one enterprise alone, because we've been through that with the Celtic Tiger, but that just shows the opportunity is there. We have problems which will be sorted over time, I think, as regards infrastructure, fragmentation of land. Most of them are not insurmountable.
Outside Kilkenny, Dennis Drennan has his herd at capacity. He's worried about the stability of milk prices.
I'd have huge concerns. We'll say we're on a world market at the moment, and we see this year we have perfect weather conditions all over the world at the moment, and there's a surge in milk coming, and what's happened in the last month is the price of milk is starting to collapse. If the world market collapses, we're hung out to dry, basically. For a lot of people that are looking to get into the sector or maybe expand rapidly in the sector, anybody who's going into serious debt, can they handle a repeat of the likes of 1999, where we basically milk cows for nothing for the year?
Price fluctuations are a danger, but Professor Alan Rennick says one of the biggest impacts will be the change to our farming and food industries.
One thing quotas has done is control the amount supplied, and with greater supply, are prices actually going to fall? And I think the processors are basing their expectations on paying a lower price, and therefore farmers have to be aware that actually, whilst there are still profitable, prices may well be lower. Actually, only 10% of the milk produced in Ireland we will be having on our cornflakes in its liquid form. The other 90% is processed into milk powders, cheese, whey, etc. And that's where, in a sense, the expansion is going to occur. I think we've got to be careful that we're not just producing a product that's going to be dumped on the world market as a commodity, because then we're really susceptible to changes in prices at the world level. So really it's this question about developing new products and finding new markets for existing products, but also finding new products. That's an important challenge for the processors and beyond.
It is uncertain, but it's also very exciting. That was Professor Alan Rennick from the School of Agriculture and Food at UCD, ending that report by Cian McCormick, who'll be looking tomorrow at rural development and the importance of, you've heard it before, you'll hear it again, the importance of quality broadband. Now, it's 7:32. The body which makes personal injury awards is calling on the insurance industry to publish details of settlements agreed outside their process. Patricia Byron, CEO of the Injuries Board, joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. Why do you want the insurance industry to provide this information?
Well, I think to position this, it's probably the business community have brought to our attention, the business groups, that they have concerns about the burgeoning number of claims that are being settled pre the board process. Now, what we would say in response to that is, let's not jump to, a decision about what's happening there. We've called over a period of years with Insurance Ireland and the various companies for this data. I think let's get the data and let's get the comfort.
Well, now, what exactly do you mean? When you say data, what information do you think would help us to decide, and business people to decide, for example, whether or not what's happening is in their best interest?
Well, we don't want competitive data, just to be clear. What we need is data such as the following. Are the claims settled on a final prognosis, so final medical on the file? Date of accident, date of payment or date of resolution, nature of claim, and are legal fees paid or not? Because questions have been posed, and again I must say this has been brought to our attention by the business community, who have concerns over this, seeing claims that they feel sure are being settled which otherwise should not be settled. And in that regard, as state body, we feel when we looked at the figures and started drawing the figures together, and that's very difficult in itself because the data is not available, we said, yes, there's 18,000 of these claims. We need to look at these.
To assess them accurately, wouldn't you need to know as well what the average settlement was for different kinds of cases?
Well, again, in that space, if we found that they were using the book of quantum, and certainly a central bank inspection in 2011 did, in fairness to the industry, say that the claims they looked at were settled in line with the book of quantum. However, I'm not sure the central bank, and I know that we engage with them regularly, were in specifically looking at things like final prognosis, date of accident, date of resolution, legal fees. Were they paid? Yes or no is one thing, but were they valid? Should they be paid? Because the Injuries Board, by the way, doesn't pay legal fees by and large.
I see, by the way, your average award has decreased slightly by about 1% to €22,082. How long is it taking? What's your average length for to deal with
By law, we're required to do it in 9 months, but we're running at 7 months currently, which I suppose against the backdrop of lowering staff levels is a good up in productivity.
Lowering staff levels, how many do you employ?
We employ now just short of 70, about 67 on the payroll. But of course, we've always used outsourcing for non-core activities. But increasingly now, we've had to move into outsourcing core and technical work, which we're not entirely comfortable about.
So why are you doing it?
Well, we're restricted by the state moratorium on employing staff.
Even though you're self-funded, you're not. It doesn't come out of the state's purse.
Yeah, we're entirely self-funded. Indeed, our pension contributions, people talk about state pensions, but we're paying at market or slightly above market rates every month, a cheque over to the centre. So we've kind of got caught up in the whole employment control framework, which we can understand in terms of good for the country, but probably is a need for refinement for agencies like ourselves who are entirely self-funding.
What are you saying? You could do with more staff?
I think we could. We'd do with the ability to replace technical staff rather than to have to outsource that sort of work.
What would you say finally to someone who's thinking of settling early? And there's nothing wrong with it. By law, you're entitled to it. In some cases, it may well make sense. But what would you say to them just to think before not going to you and settling quickly?
Well, I think we always said if the insurance industry can settle up front, this is a good thing. The main issue at the moment is if there's 18,000 of those claims being settled or circa around that, and we'd like clarity around the exact figures from the insurance industry, we want to see that they're done final prognosis. We want to see that legal fees, by and large, are not being paid, that they're not being bought off, i.e. if an insurance company has estimated that they're going to pay 20,000 on a claim, that they aren't paying 15,000 to Mrs. Smith and 5,000 to a lawyer. Because if that claim comes to the board and reviews and inspections by the central bank confirm that you actually get the 20,000 through the board. So we have to just make sure that the consumer has been well looked after in that front piece. So some insurers of late in discussions have said to me, that they're open to discussing this matter further. And I see that as a good step, but we really need to see some figures come forward to give the business community and the consumers, the claimants, comfort in this space.
Patricia Byron of the Injuries Board, thank you very much. It's 14 minutes to 8.
Roscommon doesn't have a Fianna Fáil TD. It's not alone. Over half of all Dáil constituencies don't have one either. That might change after the upcoming by-election here, but the party has a long way to go to recover votes and seats lost in the last general election. The 20 TDs and 14 senators that survived that electoral kicking are gathered here for a pre-parliamentary think-in at the Abbey Hotel in Roscommon today. Party leader Micheál Martin will be with us in about an hour's time. But first, our reporter Laura Whelan has been talking to some of the surviving Oireachtas members, first with their only female representative at Leinster House.
Well, I have been working hard not just in the Senate but also on the ground in Dublin Bay North, which is my home constituency. So I will be putting myself forward to the party, hoping to be selected as our candidate there, and hoping that people at Dublin Bay North, where I just barely missed out last time, I was fourth on the first count in a three-seater by 250 votes. So I'm hoping this time that I can convince an extra 251 people to support me and change that.
Éireann Power is one of just two female Fianna Fáil senators. The disastrous general election of 3 years ago left the party with no women TDs. It's something Fianna Fáil is acutely aware of.
I'm glad that today we have Professor Yvonne Galligan, who's one of the leading experts in the country on gender equality, coming in to speak to us. We've put aside as one of our key slots for the day to talk about the next general election and how we can ensure that we have enough female candidates. And I'm delighted to see the party giving such a priority to that.
Although the representation of women will take centre stage today, it was the family issue of childcare which opened proceedings at the think-in yesterday. One of the party's newest members is Deputy Colm Keaveney. Central to his decision to leave the Labour Party, he says, was the government's broken promises concerning struggling families.
A faithful commitment was given to the Irish people that they would protect and preserve child benefit rates of pay and payments. I remember distinctly in 2011 families struggling to go through a purse to get money to put into a child's lunch money for that week. And I was not going to be taken any hand, act or part in taking away from children or people who had no fingerprints on the economic crisis of this country.
What's life in your new party like?
For the first time in, I'd say, 15 years, I'm totally enjoying politics because I'm allowed to and I'm encouraged to wholesomely involve myself in a brief in intellectual disability and mental health. It certainly doesn't fulfil the caricature that many people have about Fianna Fáil. It's a very professional party. It is a party that allows critical analysis and there are consequences. It's much encouraged by the leadership of Fianna Fáil.
For many gathering at the Abbey Hotel in Roscommon this week, it's a time to reflect on the party's progress since 2011. Fianna Fáil's representative in Dublin is Senator Dara O'Brien.
It was, in one respect, quite a distressing time for everyone and the party itself, but we really had to have a good look at ourselves. People were writing us off in 2011. They were saying, look, the party is gone, we'll never come back. But we've worked very hard since then in being a responsible opposition party. It's been a long 3.5 years, but it's actually, as a parliamentary party member, a very interesting one too.
Brendan Smith, Fianna Fáil TD for Cavan Monaghan and spokesperson on foreign affairs and trade, believes their recent success at local level is testament to the party's work on the ground.
The first major hurdle and the challenge that we had was the local elections. We had a very successful local elections just a few months ago where we gained the largest number of votes in the country and the highest number of seats. So we're the number one party in local government in this country. That was a major achievement coming from a very heavy electoral defeat.
Among those gaining a council seat in the recent local elections was former party minister Mary Hannafin. She recently described some of the members of Fianna Fáil's front bench as anonymous. Do you agree with that? Do you feel anonymous?
No, and I disagree entirely with the analysis of Mary Hannafin. I served in the parliamentary party for quite a number of years along with Mary Hannafin when there would have been over 100 of us between TDs and senators. Today we are down to 34 parliamentary party members. And if you take over the past number of years in opposition, our party has produced 70 pieces of substantial legislation and 30 policy papers. We have led on issues that are of concern to the people, the medical card issues, the justice issues, the rural Ireland issues.
Just 5 weeks out from Budget 2015, latest polls show a rise in support for the government. Is Fianna Fáil concerned? Here's the party's spokesperson on finance, Michael McGrath.
We welcome any progress that this government can make, and you know our approach over the last 3 years or so in opposition has been constructive. We have commended the government where we believe they got it right, but equally we have held them to account where we believe they got it wrong. We don't see our role as being a party to oppose everything. You know, we want what is best for the country. We will call it as we see it. So where progress is being made on early repayment of IMF loans or on any other element of the Troika programme, which is now concluded, Fianna Fáil will be to the fore in welcoming that and in trying to make it work.
Are you happy with your leader?
Absolutely, yes. I think Micheál Martin has done a very good job over the last 3 years or so, helping to lead the party, really come out of the abyss in 2011, to reconnect with our members. We have introduced some far-reaching reforms in the organisation that we have, and then trying to reconnect with voters ultimately as well. So he has steadied the ship, provided great stability, he has a tremendous amount of experience, but ultimately we have a collective leadership because we only have 20 TDs and all of us have responsibility to lead from the front. It can't all fall on Micheál Martin's shoulders.
And we'll be talking to Micheál Martin a little later on in the programme. That was Fianna Fáil spokesperson on finance, Michael McGrath, ending that report by Laura Wheeler. And Roscommon, it's back to Dublin now at 8:06 for more business news with Brian Finn.
Gavin, thank you. The latest trade confidence index from HSBC puts Ireland at the top of the list in Europe in trade terms, and a majority of respondents expect trade volumes to grow in the coming months. Alan Duffy, HSBC Ireland CEO, is here. And Alan, what we seem to be seeing is Ireland benefiting from strong trade connections with the US and the UK, where the economies are fairly surging ahead.
Good morning, Brian. Certainly, our traditional markets of the UK and US are providing an impetus to export growth in Ireland. They're well-trodden markets for the markets we understand both culturally. Trade links are very strong, and certainly our trade confidence index is at 119 compared to 117 earlier on in the year. And when you consider that this looks at 6,000 companies across 23 markets, it's significantly higher than the new neutral level of 100.
Now, currency fluctuations are fairly erratic at the best of times, but it looks like the euro will continue weakening with a faltering eurozone economy. That will be to the benefit of Irish exporters, given our trade links with the UK.
Absolutely. In terms of, it's a hard thing to call currency volatility. We recently published a report and headlined Sterling Slides as Scotland Decides. So, you know, we're seeing sterling come off significantly against the dollar, a weaker euro as well, until we get some political stability around the Scottish referendum and around the broader European peace. I think we're going to see increased volatility in currencies going forward.
Looking at Scotland, the possibility for a hiccup there if they vote in favour of independence, how might that affect the trade balance?
I think it's significant in terms of the economies, Scotland and the UK, inextricably linked. I think it sends a signal to other markets in Europe that this could be the start of a trend. The markets hate volatility. They like certainty. I think anything that ruffles that causes significant issues.
Now, the US and the UK, we can't rely on them for all of our exports. Exporters should be looking to developing countries, particularly the BRICS nations. What's the outlook there?
Absolutely. I mean, whilst growth levels have come off in China, the economy is still powering ahead at about 7 or 8%. Ireland is doing a good job at diversifying from traditional markets. India is a huge market. We see exports and imports in the Indian market rise fivefold over the next 15 years. Very exciting market for Irish companies.
Alan Duffy of HSBC, thank you very much indeed. Finally, on the currencies, the euro is trading at $1.293 and 79.8 pence sterling, Col.
It's time for the weather forecast from Joan Blackburn of Met Aaron, but we thought we'd ask you, Joan, the obvious question. Two obvious questions. Why is it so good and how long will it continue?
Well, the reason it's so nice really is that we have an easterly flow coming off the continent at the moment, and the high pressure off over Scandinavia is keeping it generally dry. Now, the easterly flow is going to stay with us through the week, but there is a certain hint that we could see some showery outbreaks of rain developing for a time on Friday into Saturday, but not any big break as such through most of the days this week. But I'm afraid once again this morning we have dense fog and with some very poor visibilities in places, so take extra care. Now, that mist and fog will gradually thin through the morning. It will, however, be rather cloudy, but some of this cloud will tend to burn off during the late morning and afternoon, allowing some sunny spells to develop. There will, however, be a good deal of cloud generally, and some mist or haze will continue in some parts, perhaps even giving the odd spot of drizzle, so not quite as good today as recent days. The top temperatures will range from about 17 degrees in eastern areas to 19 or 20 degrees in the west and midwest. Dry tonight with mist and fog returning, and that once again becoming dense in places overnight and possibly a little drizzle locally. Overnight lows a mild 9 to 13 degrees. Mist and fog then once again will gradually lift during Wednesday morning, and we are likely to see better sunshine tomorrow. But it will stay hazy and there will be some cloudy spells in some areas. Warmer than today, the temperatures tomorrow afternoon are likely to range from 18 to 22 degrees in just a light or moderate east to northeasterly breeze. Then the outlook. Dry for most of us on Thursday as well, with hazy sunny spells developing once that overnight fog has lifted. There will be some cloudy periods, especially near southern coast, and here we could see a little patchy rain at times. The afternoon temperatures on Thursday, 18 to 21 degrees, continuing in the light or moderate east to northeasterly breezes. Friday and Saturday will be humid, close days. There are some indications that some showery rain could break out, with the highest risk in southern and eastern districts, but this is just a risk at present and it could well hold mostly dry with some hazy sunny spells continuing. Some pockets of sea mist or fog may affect the coastal areas of the south and east. The afternoon temperatures 17 to about 20 degrees these days. And then the prospects are for dry conditions on Sunday, with hazy sunny periods developing once the overnight mist and fog has lifted. That's all for me. Good morning.